For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another. With insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL, here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg! Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Dave Minuk, still away from the program. I understand that he is now in the Bahamas, joining us from the Bahamas for this morning's show remotely. So we eventually will see Dave back live and in person. Not 100% sure when that will be.
Dave's really getting around. Like, I think he's hit like 10 different countries in the last week.
Look, when you have the fortunes that the Minuk Empire allows and allots to Dave, you might as well world travel like nobody's business. And so that's what I think he's experiencing. Never mind that he's leaving a little old us behind. That's his business. And obviously he didn't seem to have a second thought about that. But in any event, it's not that important. Dave will be back when Dave is back. But you and I are here on this Saturday morning, Ezzy, for the next couple hours talking about the Winnipeg Jets. It's a game day for the first time on a Saturday night. I checked it out yesterday. I think it was
November 13th.
Yeah, since November 13th. This is the first home game on a Saturday night since November 13th. Now, there were supposed to be some other ones scheduled, but those got COVID postponed or whatever. But coincidentally enough, the last game on a Saturday night that the Jets played at home was also against the Los Angeles Kings. So it's only been about 6 months between those two games. But the Kings back in town tonight to face the Jets. I need not tell you all that it is a must-win situation, as the Jets are now 4 points out of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. The Golden Knights were victorious last night to move ahead of Dallas, albeit Dallas with four games in hand still. Golden Knights winners of their last four in a row. So they're certainly playing good hockey. The Dallas
Stars, and getting healthier, right? Getting like healthier. They still have a bunch of guys out, but Braden McNabb is back in the lineup.
Yeah.
You know, they're expecting to get some more players back, but they also have to figure out how they're going to deal with LTIR. Jesse Granger of The Athletic, I'm not sure if you saw it, Drew, good friend of the show. We've had him on Illegal Curve many times before. He was going over all the different scenarios for The Athletic, how they can get Mark Stone back before the regular season ends, because of course there's a possibility that, you know, Mark Stone has to stay on LTIR unless he's healthy, then he has to come back. But they were going through all the different scenarios. So, I mean, when you throw in...
The NHL never looks that closely about healthy. When is he fully healthy? It's amazing how they're always never fully healthy until game one of the playoffs.
Exactly. I was going to say, I bet if the Golden Knights make the playoffs, Mark Stone's going to be ready to go.
100%. He'll magically be healed in time for it, which is just another reason why the NHL is such a joke at dirt.
I mean, Drew, they could trade Evgeny Dadonov again. I mean, they could see how that goes.
Yeah, see, well,
he's been one of their best players as of late, right?
Yeah, so. I know. In any event, the Golden Knights won last night in Seattle 5-2 against that terrible Kraken team, meaning that they have, as I said, that 4-point lead on the Jets. The Jets do have a game in hand on Vegas, but it's Dallas, and they've won two in a row, and they have one of the easiest schedules remaining. That is really going to be the problem for the Winnipeg Jets. But
the Kraken right now, Drew, is you know, pass go and collect $200.
Basically, I mean,
even though Seattle somehow beat LA 6-1 last week, I don't know, you know, how that happened. I guess you know, any team can win if they just, you know, randomly. Yeah. And LA's got a bunch of injuries, but still, I mean, Seattle right now is they've traded all their players, right? Like they've got so many guys. Nice to see, by the way, Carson Kuhlman, who we had on back in, it was either 2013, 2014, before he was Bruins, the NHL draft. Yeah. He was claimed off of waivers by the Kraken, but nice to see him back playing regular NHL games.
Yeah, definitely. You know, so it's an uphill climb for the Winnipeg Jets is what I'm getting at. And I mean, we knew it was an uphill climb before the loss to Toronto on Thursday. But, you know, the Jets really just can't afford any losses. I mean, you look at the number of games left, 13 games left, and you know the numbers. You know that they need to go 11-1-1 or, you know, 10, you know, not even 10. I don't even think 10 will do it.
They'll probably have to win at least 9, Drew.
Well, even nine's not going to do it because Dallas.
Probably not. No.
I mean, the truth is, if the Jets win nine, so if that gets them to, that gives them 18 points. Let's say. I mean, that doesn't get them close enough because Dallas only needs to play even sub 500 hockey for Dallas at that point in time will be enough. You know, if the Jets get 18 points, that gets them to 94. 94 isn't going to cut it. They need to probably get to 97 to have a puncher's chance. 98, you know, to really be in maybe a bit of a comfortable situation. But if you think that this team is somehow going to rack up 22 points in their next 13 games, well, I have a bridge to sell you because it's just not realistic, especially...
I didn't know that you sold bridges.
I do. I sell bridges. It's,
okay.
It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and bridge sales. We just don't really advertise the bridge sales part very much. It's like when George wants to be an importer exporter and he's not sure about, you know, getting into the export side of the business.
My favorite bridge in Winnipeg was always the bridge drive-in because it opened up, right? Like it went up. I don't think it goes up anymore. No. I think it's permanently closed, but I always like that bridge.
No, the BD, that
bridge. I like to drink under bridges, as you know, Drew. So I'm a big aficionado of bridges.
First of all, you're wrong. The BDI bridge never moved, I don't think. You're thinking about it's the bridge.
No, it opened up. It definitely opened up.
I don't think so.
It's one of the bridges in Winnipeg. I thought it was the
Disraeli Bridge. It's not the Disraeli Bridge. The bridge that if you go down, what bridge is that?
Well, you should know this, Drew. You sell bridges.
I sell bridges. You would think I'd be more in tune with this.
Do you play bridge too?
I don't.
The card game that my Baba used to play?
Yeah, my grandparents always used to play bridge, but may they rest in peace. But no, I don't play. I don't play bridge. I've never learned the game. But we were playing Skip-Bo earlier today with the kids. Have you ever played Skip-Bo?
I have no idea what that means. Yeah. I remember Tybo with Billy Blanks.
Yeah, that's different. That's an exercise. Neither of us do that. But Skip-Bo is a card game that my wife grew up on. So she's teaching the kids how to play Skip-Bo. And so we were doing that when they woke up earlier this morning. But
well, if you guys are playing it, we got to keep up with the Mandels.
Well, there you go. That's really everyone's life goal is keeping up with the...
Drew, Mandels. I mean, it really shows you what age we are right now. Because back in the day, we would be, we're going out, hitting the town, having some beers. Now we're, I was playing Snakes and Ladders with my daughter, Ariella. So we are
always a good game.
Really washed up.
People want us to start talking about the Jets. And we can only we will do that, folks.
We will.
It by now. You've been watching this show for long enough. You've been listening.
We just have to get warmed up. We just have to talk about our kids and talk about our our angry wives, and then we'll get going here. Just kidding, Naomi. I love you.
In any event, look, the Jets' schedule is the real difficult part. I mean, winning that many games when you haven't won that many games this year is uphill. But you look at the schedule, and it's now the month of April. The month of March was a relatively soft part of the Jets' schedule. We saw the number of games against non-playoff teams. We saw the number of games where the Jets were ahead of the other team in the standings. You know, what you have now, and starting tonight with Los Angeles, is you have a whole bunch of games coming up against teams that are, frankly, better than you, at least in the standings. And maybe the Jets are better than them on paper, but the Jets haven't been better than very many teams in reality all year long. So the on paper argument is it does not hold much water anymore, to pardon the pun, as we were talking about bridges. But you got Los Angeles, then it gets a little bit easy. You got Detroit on Wednesday. Detroit, we know, is one of the bottom feeding teams in the East.
That'll be 11-2 for the Jets.
Yeah. That's what Detroit lost to, was at Pittsburgh last week, 11-2, something like that. You got Friday against Colorado. It's not getting, you got two games left against Colorado. You got to go out east to face Florida, Tampa, the Rangers, Carolina.
The killer stretch, Drew, for me. And you're right. I mean, the schedule is not getting easier. It's getting harder. Everybody knows that. You mentioned it, right? Like, you're going to get, a Detroit Red Wings team that's not very good. But we know that, Colorado is one of the best teams, if not the best team in the league. And that four-game road trip out east, when you have to play Tampa Bay, you have to play the Rangers, you have to play the Panthers, and you have to play the Hurricanes. The back-to-back specifically on Friday night, Saturday night, that's April. That's coming up in 2 weeks against the Panthers and the Lightning.
That's killer, by the way.
Yeah, we're hosting a Seder, so I'll make sure that I, roll up all of my gefilte fish and everything like that and matzo balls, but... Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be easy, but all you can do is focus on this game coming up tonight, and you have to put that one in the rearview mirror. I mean, this Kings team, I mean, they're firmly in a playoff spot right now, but they can fall out of, you know, second, and they can also fall out of third, right? Like the Oilers are only 1 point back of the mm-hmm. Kings. I think the Oilers have a game in hand, if I'm not mistaken.
You're correct.
But you know, you've got Vegas that's right behind them. And even though Vegas has not been playing well the last, you know, month and a half, I mean, what are they, 4 points back of the Kings? So in theory, the Kings could easily find themselves in a wild card spot, and that's not what they want to be. So what I'm saying is that, you know, this is a big game for the Kings as well. You know, it's more, you know, do or die for the Jets, but you know, the Kings, they're going to be playing hard right till the end of the season, because for them, even though a playoff spot is pretty much guaranteed, I mean, where they finish is not guaranteed. And everybody at this point just wants to avoid playing Colorado.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your number one? And, you know, playing Calgary is no piece of cake either, but you're absolutely right. No. Your number one goal is do not.
Even though they beat Calgary a couple nights ago, but yeah, your point is well taken.
Calgary's still a very good hockey team, but you're right, Ezzy. I mean, LA has been the surprise team of the league. And I mean, you know, in preparing for this morning show, and yes, we do prepare, folks, don't be so shocked at that revelation. You know, I went and sort of looked at the Kings, and they're almost doing it a little, and I don't want to take anything away from them, because they're a very good hockey team. They're playing at a 600 points percentage. They've got 37 wins on the year. So not taking anything away from them, but they are a little smoke and mirrors, I would say, in that you look at their goal differential, +2. Nobody else, that's the lowest of all of the playoff teams in the Western Conference. You look at their goaltending, you know, it's not fantastic. It's not like either goalie has been outstanding. They're sort of, you know, what I would describe as relatively average numbers, you know, save percentages, below 920. Jonathan Quick's at a 909, Cal Peterson's at a 901. Goals against, you know, over 2.5, over 2.6 for each of them.
They have trouble scoring goals. That's the biggest issue for the Kings. And we have to mention
goals for, middle of the pack, and goals against. So, you know, they've succeeded, but none of their numbers jump out at you as a team that's saying they're excellent in this one area.
Yeah, this is where Jets fans are not going to like hearing this. There's no team, at least I think they're still number one. If they're not number one, they're in the top three in the league for suppressing shots. They do not give up a lot of shots. They play a very structured defensive game. But I was going to mention, you know, we can't talk about the Kings this season and not talk about the injuries, right? Like Quinton Byfield is back in the lineup. But you remember he suffered that injury. I believe it was an ankle injury in the preseason or training camp. He's back now. He's contributing. But, you know, Drew Doughty, it was announced a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago, you know, he might not be back not only for the rest of the regular season, he might not even be back, you know, for the playoffs. And that's one of the reasons why they acquired Troy Stetcher, right? Who played with Alex Edler in Vancouver. So, I mean, yeah, this defense is, I mean, you look at it and, you know, a guy like Sean Durzi, I really like. He came over in the Jake Muzzin trade a few years back, you know, former Owen Sound attack in the Ontario Hockey League. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a pretty no-name defense. Tobias Bjornfoot, who's obviously, you know, a young prospect, or I guess, you know, he's no longer a prospect. He's playing, you know, full-time. But, I mean, it starts, you know where I'm going with this, Drew. For me, the Kings turnaround, it all starts with Philip Deneau, Victor Arvidsson on that second line. They have been fantastic. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, Andrei Kopitar is obviously having a bounce back year as well. But, you know, those two guys, they were a one-line team, right? Like it was basically, you know, Kopitar, Alex Iafallo, Adrian Kempe. And, you know, now you know, they have a really good second line. So it's a combination of, you know, guys stepping up, younger players, you know, probably playing more, you know, than they otherwise would have. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't for injuries, like a guy like Sean Durzi, right? He's 23 years old, but he spent the majority of his pro career playing for Ontario Reign in the AHL. So you're right, though. I mean, there's not a lot of superstars on this team. I would still call Andrei Kopitar a superstar. He might be, you know, towards the end of his career at this point. Yeah. But, you know, you watch him play and it looks like, you know, the same Andrei Kopitar from, you know, those years that the Kings won the cup. So let's not get it twisted. They're still a very good team, but they definitely don't have the high end talent of a team like the Leafs, for example.
No, they don't have that superstar talent, but what they have is an identity. And wouldn't that be nice? I mean, you know, that we're still sitting here, you know, ahead of tonight's game, you know, game number 70 on the schedule. And the Jets' identity is that of a bad defensive team. I mean, that's what the Jets' identity is. It's a team that is soft.
According to Craig Button, it definitely is.
Well, I don't know if you read our buddy Mike McIntyre today, but Mike sort of picked up, piggybacked on the conversation that we had last week on the show with him and with Craig. And we do encourage everybody, if you missed Craig Button's appearance on IC last Saturday, go back to the YouTube channel, go back to the podcast. It's at about the hour and a half mark. Craig, you know, we had a real lengthy conversation about the Jets and his thoughts regarding how easy they are to play against. And Craig is of the opinion that it's coaching that is a big problem for the Jets. And we'll talk about coaching throughout the course of the show today, because there was some really interesting coaching, not necessarily news, but coaching comments coming out of Vancouver this week. And I think it might tie in for the Winnipeg Jets next year in that Bruce Boudreau, who I just assumed was going to be the full-time coach of the Canucks next year, Ezzy. It sounds like that's not necessarily going to be the case. If you heard what Elliot
Friedman... That would be a huge mistake on their part, Drew.
A massive mistake. But if you heard what Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick had to say on the 32 Thoughts podcast, and you listen to Vancouver's general manager, Patrick Alvin, he was on a station in Vancouver. It did not sound at all like it's a sure thing that Bruce Boudreau is coming back to Vancouver. And in fact, if you listen to it, you'd say he's not coming back, which is crazy to me, because if Bruce, and look, I'm on record as saying the Jets should have made a coaching change earlier than they did, with Paul Maurice deciding to quit on the team and go on his merry way. That should have happened a few weeks earlier, whether it be him leaving or the team dismissing him. And Bruce Boudreau should have been the Jets' new head coach. And I think the rest of the season would have looked a lot different. That, obviously, water under the bridge. Sorry. But if Bruce Boudreau becomes available again in this offseason, the Jets have to hire him. I mean,
well,
it's a no-brainer,
you know,
to me.
Well, and there's a lot of things that have to happen before that, such as, you know, Bruce Boudreau not coming back full time. It looks like, you know, that's something that could happen. I agree with you. I didn't see that coming. When I saw that, I didn't listen to, I'm not sure if they talked about it on the 32 Thoughts podcast or if it was in the article. I didn't read it, but I saw it on social media.
Yeah.
And that definitely surprised me. So you would have to think, at the very least, Drew, if Boudreau's not coming back to in Vancouver, the Jets would have to take a look and seriously, you know, consider going down that path. But again, all I'm saying is we just don't know if that's the case. You know, Dave Lowry, you know, could he become the full-time NHL head coach for the Jets? Of course he could. I think there's an argument to be made that the Jets should go in a different direction because the results haven't been much different under Lowry as opposed to under Paul Maurice. Mm-hmm. But the fact that a guy like Bruce Boudreau is out there, and there's other names, and, you know, there's kind of the retread NHL head coaches, and then there's the, you know, the coaches that come from college or come from the AHL. So that's going to be one of the most fascinating things about this Jets offseason. You know, depending whether or not the Jets get into the playoffs or not, is where are they going? Where's the direction of this team overall? And specifically, you know, who's going to be the guy behind the bench to lead it?
Well, absolutely. I think that is the, I mean, I was talking about this, you know, privately yesterday with somebody. It's
not publicly.
Not publicly. I mean, I guess it was public in the sense that, you know, I wasn't, you know, doing it through some sort of Morse code or something. But, you know, that to me is the number one pressing issue for this Jets team in the off. Look, and this is no disrespect to Dave Lowry. You know, he's had a good number of games to try and prove that this team is anything different or that he's anything different as a head coach. And it's clear that he's just, you know, that whatever message he's been trying to sell and whatever he's been trying to implement, it hasn't worked for this team. Now, is that partially maybe a function of having some of the same assistant coaches next to him on the bench? Maybe. But after this many years of middling results, as I go through puberty, apparently for the first time in a long time.
I heard that.
Yeah,
there was could have been another tickle. You had a tickle the other night, Drew. Maybe that tickle in your throat's back.
No, that was just a crack. That wasn't a tickle. Okay, that was a crack. Yeah. Nice to see that I'm still able to do that. Go through things of that nature. Look, the results are that you just can't bring back the same coaching staff. I think to some extent,
I would be shocked if at the very least there isn't some change in the coaching staff. I'm not going to single out anybody. I'm just saying I would also be surprised if at the very least there aren't one or two new coaches in place. And it's possible, Drew, that, you know, you see everybody replaced.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying that that's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, when you think about it, at the beginning of this year, what were we talking about? how the Jets were now finally constructed with the acquisitions of Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon and bringing Paul Stastny back on the one-year deal. What were we talking about? This Jets team is ready to take that next step, get back into the playoffs, and go on a long run. Mm-hmm. If you can't even get into the playoffs with this group, I don't know how you bring back the same coaching staff.
You can't. You can't, because you can't sell that to your fan base. And for the first time since the team returned, they're now in the business of selling tickets, because you see the ads and you see the different packages. And today or Wednesday is Connor Hellebuck, you know, bobblehead fishing day or fishing bobblehead day, whatever the hell it is. They're in the business now of having to compete.
What, the bobblehead's going to be Bucky fishing?
The bobblehead is Hellebuck with a, yeah, like holding a fishing line and fishing.
That's you've awesome.
Seen, yeah. So
I saw the commercial. I didn't realize that the bobblehead was actually Hellebuck fishing. But
I believe that's, I'm cool. Pretty sure that's the case.
I'll pick you up a few, Drew. I'll get you like 12 of them.
Thank you.
That's so you all can just give them away to your, you know, give them out to your family.
Thank you. My family and friends will certainly appreciate that. My point being, though, that you can't bring back the same status quo and say it's acceptable. Now, does that also mean that Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to be out? Well, earlier in the year, I would have said yes. Lately, I'm less confident that that's going to happen. But I do think the coaching staff is going to have to be overhauled, and it's going to need, and you can't be the Oilers of a number of years ago where you bring back, you know, somebody that's got ties to the organization. I don't think you can go and get Pascal Vincent, and I think Pascal has a bright future ahead of him and will one day be a good NHL head coach, but I don't think that right now is the answer, that he's the answer. I think you need a fresh voice from the outside who can come in without any blinders on and really evaluate what you have from your team. You have to make that determination, you know, is it a coaching problem that for the Jets being so bad defensively, or is it a personnel problem for the Jets being so bad defensively? As Mike McIntyre in today's Free Press opined that he believes that it might not necessarily be that the coaches can't coach, but that the players aren't coachable. Could it be a hybrid of both? Could be. But you heard what Craig said on the show last Saturday, Ezzy. Craig said that players, for the most part, do what the coaches ask of them. They are willing to implement whatever system is being asked of them. If this is the system, and the system is this terrible, then that tells you
the system is broken down, is what has happened. The system is not working. And the funniest thing is, like, obviously Mark Scheifele is one of the players that's talked about a lot in terms of his defensive play. And, you know, there was a goal against the Leafs. Was it the Ilya Mikheyev fifth goal, the shorthanded goal? I think that, yeah, you know, he was being criticized for his back check, including by us. I mean, it wasn't a good back check. He definitely could have given at least, you know, 20% more on that back check. But the funniest thing is, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the Adam Oates effect. We know that, you know, Adam Oates has a big influence, coaches, you know, Scheifele, and they talk regularly. But the funniest thing, first off, I don't think it's that simplistic, just, you know, the Adam Oates effect. But the funniest thing is, if you remember when Adam Oates was the head coach of the Washington Capitals, he was the one who really tried to get Alex Ovechkin to play defensive hockey, right? So this notion that, you know, Adam Oates is instructing Mark Scheifele, or, you know, they have this, you know, MO of not playing defensive hockey, I think is ridiculous. Well, he tries to make him a better offensive player. And I'm sure they look at all their shifts, but they focus on the offensive side of the game. But I just think it's one thing for Scheifele to, you know, give up too much on the defensive side of the game. But to think that Adam Oates is specifically telling Mark Scheifele to not play well defensively, I think is a stretch.
I don't think he would ever say, you know, you need to be defensively irresponsible. But I bet that if you hooked up a lot, or if you injected NHL head coaches with sodium pentothal, and asked them truth serum, that's right.
Yep.
And asked them what they think of Adam Oates and what they think of the skills coaches that now are frequent throughout the league, I bet you that they would say they do more detriment than they're positive to a player, especially during the season. It's one thing if you want to work with a skills coach in the off season. You know, the off season's for trying things.
But well, and all the players do. All of them.
All of them do during
most the, of them.
Yeah. Yes, during the offseason, I don't think there's anybody would have a problem with that. But during the season, when there's another voice in a player's ear that might be telling them to, or might be working with them to focus on areas that aren't where the coach wants them to be focused on, I think that causes a big problem. And so I'm not laying the blame. I'm just saying that I think it is a factor that coaches now, NHL head coaches, have to deal with and have to take into consideration when they're trying to coach up their players as best as possible. Because a lot of coaching, and this is what sort of bringing it full circle to, you know, the Bruce Boudreau conversation. You know, I was listening to it yesterday. Elliot Friedman and Jeff Merrick were talking about it, and they were saying, you know, Bruce Boudreau doesn't necessarily get doesn't have the reputation of being a great X's and O's coach. Now, they both said that they think that that's a bit unfair, that he's a better X's and O's coach than he gets credit for. But they said that what he's most well regarded for is helping players through the grind that is an 82 game season.
Motivation, because, right?
Motivation.
Yeah.
Coming to the rink with your head up, held up high, having, you know, enjoying coming to the rink, because the season is too
guys long. Definitely like playing for Boudreau. I know that.
That's right. And that's right. You never hear a player say they don't like playing for him. And his track record is one of success. Not so much in the playoffs, admittedly, that he's had his struggles in the playoffs. But again, and piggybacking on what Elliot said, and I do encourage everybody when, you know, when our show is done, you can go listen to the 32 Thoughts. It was the first sort of 10 or 15 minutes of the most recent episode. He said, you know, getting to the playoffs is a pretty good accomplishment for, you know, it's not easy to get to the playoffs. When you don't make the playoffs, all you want to do is get to the playoffs the next year. And so for a Jets team that is not going to make the playoffs, I can say with a fair degree of confidence, getting a head coach in here who might change the tone and has a proven track record of success and getting teams consistently into the playoffs, that might be a pretty good option if he comes available, if Vancouver makes a decision that I don't expect, that they seem to be on the verge of making a mistake to that effect. Time will tell. It'll be a fascinating offseason. Let's head to break. When we come back, more Jets talk. Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us next. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg are with you. It's a Saturday morning. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show. There they are. She's already laughing.
Marty on his shoulder. You know that Jason can't appear on the program. I got to say, Jay, as he warned me, you know, earlier in the week, he said he wasn't sure that Marty was going to be on the show with you. Marty might have been out at the lake or something. But it's nice to see you, of course, and it's especially nice to see your bird Marty doing a great job, of course, bringing some great insight into the program. He can fill in for Dave, you know, if he wants to stick around after your interview's over. He's about as articulate as Manuka.
I feel like you guys can hear me okay.
Yeah, you sound great.
I feel a little like. I feel a little like Hall and Oates, and trust me, I'm not Daryl in this relationship. I'm like the Oates of this relationship. You don't really care much about me as long as Marty's here.
Yeah, you want Hall and Oates works. You can be the, you know, you can be the Garfunkel, and he can be the Paul Simon if you want to go with that analogy. You know, any of those work certainly.
Yeah, Don Henley or Joe Walsh, right?
Oh no, come on, don't go there.
Don't go there. Okay, I like the Eagles. I'm a big Eagles fan. Yeah. I saw the Eagles a few years ago. Well, I guess that was more like 10 years ago now, but yeah, love the Eagles. Not going to get into that, Jay.
Okay. Well, especially because the Eagles program. And the Bird.
Get Mark Kivas in here if you want a music show.
Yeah, no, trust me, we'd be, I would certainly be out of my element if we'd begin to even go anywhere down a music platform. So we'll stick to hockey. The game tonight, of course, the Jets and the LA Kings. And, you know, Jay, we were talking about it in the opening segment. We were talking about sort of this Jets team as it currently stands with, you know, the 13 games remaining and the playoffs being less and less likely, you know, as the season winds down. Can you foresee a scenario where, you know, the status quo, particularly related to a coaching staff, comes back next year. Is that something that you could see True North trying to sell to their fan base if this season continues to end the way it appears as though it's going to end?
Well, first of all, like, I guess, you know, pipe dream is obviously probably the word we're using now as far as postseason goes. And yes, you guys talked about this obviously before I came on. Winnipeg, to get to 96 points, they got to go 10-3. Mm-hmm. And then that's hoping that Dallas could go 8-7 and still pass them. So
yeah, pipe dream.
Pipe dream. So I think we need to almost not mention postseason anymore and just like, what are they trying to put a stamp on towards the last dozen or so games? And I think there's some individuals that have to try and step up and maybe make amends for some of their play. But I think the bigger picture, as you suggested, is what do they do in the offseason? Mm-hmm. And I'm in total agreement that, and I mean no disrespect to Dave Lowry and the good folks that work for him, but it wouldn't send the right message to the fan base. It wouldn't send the right message to the rest of the National Hockey League onlookers that you come back with the same group that has led this team. And really, I think it maybe goes farther higher up than that. I think that the job that Kevin Cheveldayoff has done is, he's done certainly some great things to build this organization and to build the cupboard with some young players. But, 11 seasons now, and there hasn't, save for the great run in 18, it's been sort of taking steps backwards since then. And I think even starting from the top, there may, Mark Chipman and his ownership group may have to look at for lack of a better phrase, sort of cleaning house. I cannot see Dave Lowry and Charlie Huddy and Jamie Compon being back behind the bench next year. Maybe Compon stays, but again, if you're bringing in your own guy, he's going to want to assemble his own coaching staff. Wade Flaherty may have a great relationship with the two goaltenders, and maybe he survives because goaltending really hasn't. And we've all read Twitter and we've all seen. I mean, I think it's very hard to come down on Connor Hellebuyck because he has done yeoman's work for four seasons, backstopping this club that has been, defensively challenged would be the nice way of putting it. And Marty is agreeing with me, humming in my ear.
You can hear the chirp.
How many pucks do you have to stop before you just get fatigued, before you just your warts start to show? And I just think to place any blame on Connor Hellebuyck for any of the defeats this year is ridiculous. Yes, he's had some off nights, but the Jets have had lots and lots and lots of, in front of him, have had lots of off nights. And I think that it's going to be a very, very interesting summer. If you're like me and you like, if you like chaos, this is going to be a good summer.
Chaos.
That's Drew's middle name, Jay.
It's a lot more fun to cover chaos than it is to, although 18, we all had fun in 18. There's no question. But I just think that, we went into this, I think we all went into this trade deadline knowing that Andrew Kopp was gone and that there may be some minor moves to try and push them over the top. But we weren't going to see an entire shake up, because that's the kind of stuff you do in the summer. And that's probably the kind of thing you do with somebody else whose finger is on the trigger.
Jay, you just mentioned 18, and Drew's mind immediately went to that big night that he had at the Charlie, the old bar in the Charleswood. So Drew's reliving his glory years at the Charlie right now. But
there's your 40th birthday.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay.
My 40th is coming up. I'm looking forward to going to
the Palomino one who's supposed Club. To be the bird is the one who's supposed to be doing the chirping, not the guest. The bird chirps.
He's second banana. He's second banana.
He's feeding the lines into your earpiece, I think, is what's happening.
Exactly.
Jay, we want to get to Mike's column in today's Winnipeg Free Press. If anybody hasn't read it yet, I mean, you got to read it.
I don't read Mike.
Yeah. You're more of a Mike Sawatsky guy, right, Jay? But, he makes some good points, and we want to get to that. But, you mentioned Connor Hellebuyck, and I agree with everything that you said there. Just going back to the game against the Leafs, like, we talked about this on the post-game show. I can't speak for you or anybody else, but, I was surprised that the Jets didn't go back with Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, Hellebuck was the only reason why the Jets were in that game in the first place. The first period, the Sabres could have easily had a few more goals in. And I'm not blaming that loss on Eric Comrie, obviously, because the Leafs are a really good team. But in hindsight, was that a mistake to not go back to Connor Hellebuck, considering how well he played against the Sabres?
Well, I learned long ago to never question coaches about goaltenders. They don't like being asked about it. They certainly don't like being second-guessed about it. But I don't understand in the back-to-back, when the setup is the Sabres and the high-flying Leafs, why Eric Comrie is playing the second half of the back-to-back. And there's got to be some method to their madness there. I don't get it. So I think they set themselves up for failure right from the start. And I give me no disrespect to Eric Comrie. He's done great work this year. But when that type of firepower is coming at you and the Jets are so porous in their own end and they just give up, just the freedom those guys have to roam around it shouldn't actually surprise us anymore. Because we've seen it all year against the upper echelon teams. But I don't understand the makeup of or what the plan was. Dave told us he had a plan. And if that was the plan, it didn't really work, I don't think. I mean, they got a win in Buffalo, but you know, barely. They've had a lot of wins barely lately.
Mm-hmm. Against some bad teams.
Yeah, and it just you know it's funny, they started so well against Toronto, and I think a lot of us who are just, you know, watching from afar, we thought that maybe this was a night where they were going to put the stamp on a real well-earned 2 points, and they just ran out of. Blake said they ran out of steam. They just weren't good.
Sometimes it's that simple, isn't it? There, Jason Bell is our guest Saturday morning. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Later tonight, the Illegal Curve post-game show after the Jets and the Kings, right around 8:45 p.m. Central Time. Join us back here for that. You know, Jason, you know, we talk about the off season, and certainly that is where a lot of people's attention is shifting. The enigma that has become Mark Scheifele this year, the numbers, if you just look at the numbers and you never watched the game for the Jets this year, you'd say, hey, that's a pretty good season because the numbers look good. Anybody who's watched this Jets team this year has seen glaring mistake after glaring mistake, and they've never seen Mark Scheifele, for the most part, really be a dominant force out there that they've seen in years past. What becomes of Mark Scheifele this offseason for the Winnipeg Jets?
It's been it's pretty distressing to see the work that he's done in his own end, obviously. And I thought he was becoming a pretty good two-way center, you know, a couple of years ago, but he's regressed in that regard. The offensive numbers are still great. You know, down low in the offensive zone and on the power play, I mean, you can't take away from the vision and the creativity and the skill set. And he's got a great shot. I mean, he's got a sniper's mentality at times, and he can be a very fun player to watch. But in this day and age, I mean, you can't be a one-trick pony. And I thought about this morning. It looked, you know, even the last three or four games, we used to have a phrase about a player that only worried about, you know, he dogged it in one part of the ice, and as soon as he was able to spring the other way, I don't know if you remember the phrase that we used to use when we were kids, and I don't think we can, I'm not sure we can say it anymore. Goal, you know, and it's almost like he's become so focused on the offensive side of it and is not being particularly responsible defensively. And I think that's a sign of a player that is just kind of, I don't want to say given up, because I think they all try hard. At least you'd hope they would, but it's just, he certainly lost his direction when it comes to this team. And I think the best thing for Mark Scheifele and for the organization is that he gets traded somewhere. He has to be considered a very, very key asset for this team. This is not like a salary dump. This is not a player that's been much maligned in our market. We got to get rid of. It's that you have to get, and this is where a very shrewd GM, whether it's Cheveldayoff or somebody else, you got to get a king's ransom for this guy, because there are, you know, is he going to be a number one center on a team that's about to win a Stanley Cup? Maybe not, but he's going to be a darn great second line center that's going to rack up points, or he's going to be a number one center somewhere else on a team that is building towards a Stanley Cup. So yeah, I don't think it's like, oh, we got to get rid of this guy. He's terrible. I mean, that's, we know that's ludicrous. It's just, it's been a decade, or it's been 11 years since they called his name out of the draft, and he's given them great service. And I think it's almost like the two sides sort of deservedly. So the two sides need to part ways, but that trade becomes like the key to your summer in my mind anyway.
Let me ask you this, Jay. Sorry, piggybacking on that, Ezzy. Sorry about interrupting you there. You know, do you think this organization has it within them to have hard conversations and make difficult, proactive decisions? Because the track record of proactive decisions for this team isn't great. They usually...
Well, there's been the loyalty factor has always been the perceived issue here. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, and you guys have touched on this, is that the fan base was willing to accept pretty much anything because of the honeymoon phase. Well, the honeymoon phase is over, as we all know. I think this is still a market that is keenly interested in this organization and will continue to support the organization, but they need now to see some tangible steps. They need to see that the organization is willing to make hard decisions. Then that may mean parting ways with a GM, the only GM they've ever known. Parting ways with a number one center, the only number one center they've ever known. And parting ways with a coaching staff that's for the most part has been, it's become kind of rather staid to in my mind. I've had many dealings with Charlie Huddy. You're not going to find a nicer guy. So engaging, just a wonderful man, and probably does great work behind the scenes. But even just sort of like how he's been able to sort of maneuver his way around without getting losing his job when the team
had caught in the crossfire or anything.
Has done so poorly defensively. I just don't even think just on the surface, just for perception wise, there has to be a change there.
Okay. Go ahead.
This is big for the ownership group this summer.
Absolutely. I mean, when you talk about, you know, there could be all coaches could be removed and replaced with other coaches. There could be one or two coaches. And then, as you mentioned, I mean, are the Jets possibly going to move one of their big core pieces? So I agree with you, even though we say that every year and every time we have you on, and before the preseason, the off season, we talk about how big of an off season it's going to be. But I think this is going to be bigger in the sense of, you know, top to bottom. Jay, I wanted to ask you about Morgan Barron, because I think you'd agree it was a little surprising that the Jets recalled him. And then obviously it's now not an emergency recall. It's a regular recall. And, you know, for those, you know, who don't know, you know, most Jets fan will know, but he was one of the pieces that came back from the Rangers for, Andrew Kopp. What did you think? He only played 5 minutes, I know, but he had a shot on net, I remember.
Yeah,
it was the second or third period.
It's hard to get a read on the Baron. I think it was the nickname we gave in our secret chat, that his famous move is the claw. You have to be a guy my age to know what that means, of course. Baron von Raschke. But anyway, I think
you're probably going back to the old AWA now there, Jay.
Too many years ago. You know, I can't even really give a grade to Morgan Barron. It wouldn't be fair to me or to him.
Yeah, 5 minutes isn't a big sample size.
The bigger
size,
question,
right?
I think maybe you're trying to get me to talk about here, as and Drew, is at least in my mind, why him and not David Gustafson? I don't know if that's where you're going with this. I think that nobody understands. I can't figure out why David Gustafson is not with this club right now. Can either of you shed some light on it?
Well,
he's played 20 some game at the NHL level already, and has at least in my mind has not played himself into the American Hockey League. If anything, he continues to play himself into the National Hockey League, and there is a reluctance that we don't understand, and maybe there's something to do that I don't get with cap issues or whatever that is preventing him from becoming part of a ever-changing revolving door of people on a fourth line that they can't figure out, going on a decade. So I don't understand why David Gustafson is not with this hockey club.
Well, and the obvious, right? Sorry, I was just going to say, Drew, the obvious one is, right, we saw the Moose, you know, spank the Toronto Marlies yesterday. What was it, 5-0 or something like that? And Gustafson's on the top line with Mikey Essiemont and Jeff Malott, right? So we know that he's playing a key role on the Moose. Have they made the decision, Jay, that, you know, they're keeping Gustafson down with the Moose, you know, regardless of what the needs are with the Jets. I have no idea. Are there salary cap implications? You would think that, you know, there wouldn't be an issue. And obviously Adam Brooks is the other, you know, forward who's an option on the fourth line. But I think, you know, I feel like I'm, you know, the spokesperson for Dave Manuk right now, because, you know, he's been watching Gustafson probably more than anybody in the city. But I think he would say that, you know, he really would also help you, you know, in the penalty killing department. Not that the Jets, you know, are struggling right now on the penalty kill. Maybe obviously the Leafs put three goals, you know, past the Jets, but that's one of the top power plays in the league. But I agree with you. I think there's an argument to be made that, you know, it is time for the Gus bus.
Bring it, back it up.
Well, you know, I think that's...
So, and you know, he doesn't have to play center. He does not have to play center either. I mean, I think you'd be hard to really take pot shots at the kind of season that Dominic Toninato has had. I think he's done everything they've asked for as a fourth line center, right? And he kills penalties. And is he around for the long haul? I mean, he's probably a place filler for David Gustafson, but David Gustafson could certainly play along the wall. He's big enough. Maybe they have, as you suggest, as maybe right now the focus is on an AHL championship run. But that doesn't necessarily take away from the fact that he could have been here 3 weeks ago or so.
Well, right. The two aren't mutually exclusive, right? Like, exactly. I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, Morgan Barron, everybody knows that, you know, Barron is a guy that, you know, could end up being, you know, a guy in the Jets bottom six one day. But I think, you know, on the surface, it looks like, you know, David Gustafson is being passed over a little bit. But I think, you know, it's certainly surprising because he's arguably been the Moose best forward, right? Like Jeff Malott is up there. Mikey Essiemon has had a good season. We mentioned that, but just based on his skill set and, you know, the fact that, you know, he's a second round pick and everything like that, it's a little bit surprising, but it's really hard to, I mean, the only other thing I was going to throw in there, Jay, is, you know, the Jets acquire Mason Appleton, as you broke the trade, should give you credit for that. And, you know, they acquire Zach Sanford. So maybe, you know, by making those acquisitions, you're saying, okay, we're going with veterans now in our bottom six. Sanford's been playing on the third line, but he's also been playing up in top six with Kyle Connor out, right? But then that really doesn't really, that logic doesn't make as much sense, because now you've passed Adam Brooks over for Morgan Barron, as opposed to you thought David Gustafson was kind of next on that call-up list, right? So it is a little bit confusing why Gustafson hasn't been given a shot here with some injuries.
It is to me. Again, there may be something behind the scenes. Maybe they just feel like for his development, this is the place he should be. We've always talked about them. It's always been mentioned that he's sort of the heir apparent to Adam Lowry, but Adam Lowry doesn't seem to be going anywhere anytime soon. So
got 3 years left on his deal.
Yeah, and a pretty nice chunk of change. So then that means that David Gustafson is probably the logical choice for a fourth line center.
Let me ask you this.
And on a real good team, though, I think on a real good team, Adam Lowry, on a real good team who's challenging for a Stanley Cup,
yeah, Adam Lowry is a fourth line center. Yeah, absolutely.
Just like in 2018, right?
Many times.
Yeah. Well, that's I think part of the perception problem is that, you know, you're absolutely right. Adam Lowry on a Stanley Cup contender is not above a fourth line center. He's too offensively limited. Now he can play a very smart, a strong role at that fourth line center.
And he's not a 7 minute fourth line center.
That's right.
He's a 12 to 13 minute fourth line center that is your number one penalty killing unit
and takes draws for you and everything. And there's just, I mean, it's almost like like I said, you know, does True North acknowledge that? Do they understand that's what he really, you know, if you are designing a Stanley Cup contender, that's what he is? Or do they think that he really is a third line center on a Stanley Cup contender? Because I agree with you, and I think Ezzy agrees with us, that realistically, that's not, you know, on a championship team, he's on a fourth line. He's a fourth line player. So is Mason Appleton. He's on a championship team, he's more of a fourth line player than he is anywhere higher in your lineup for the most part, at least in my opinion.
Well, it just goes back. We've talked ad nauseum about the bottom six, right? I mean, the bottom six is one huge Achilles heel, and also, you know, and to a certain extent, maybe the bottom. The bottom pairing in your defensive group too. So there's work to do this summer. I mean, I think that we're going to, you know, obviously Sandberg is going to play a role next year. I don't know necessarily if Billy Hanel has helped himself the last week or so under trying circumstances. I mean, you know, it's because they're on a playoff push and they're not playing well as a team defensively. And so some of his warts stick out. I think Logan Stanley has really struggled the last couple of games. So, go ahead.
That's what I was going to ask you about, Jay. You know, for a team and an organization that preaches, you know, draft and develop, as if that's unique among the other 31 NHL teams or anything, it seems like the development phase for this Jets team hasn't really been succeeding for the last number of years. It's almost like you draft these players and they seem to have some upside, but then they very quickly plateau. You know, the last real player that the Jets drafted and developed into becoming a regular, you know, going from the AHL through to the NHL, in my mind, is Kyle Connor. You know, it seems like, you know, a guy, you look at the guys who, you know, previously had success at the AHL level, Jack Roslovic. Well, we know that never translated here to anything long term, whether that was a personality clash, whatever it might have been. You know, Sammy Niku. Well, he's clearly not made it to the NHL level. His development has stalled out in this organization and other organizations.
Sammy Niku has been freed, is what you're saying.
He's been freed to play in the AHL for other organizations. Mm-hmm. It just seems like, to me at least, that they're developing to a point, and then they're not able to get over that next hurdle. Now, I don't know if that's a developmental issue or if that's a function of the guys they're drafting are more sort of just, you know, very good AHL players and maybe not good to great NHL players.
Yeah, they haven't drafted very high, obviously, and I'm not trying to let them off the hook, but that's a reality. I think we go back to the 2017 draft. You and I were there. And
Tri-town.
Christian Vesalainen is not looking like a great pick at this point. 2015 was a great year, is it? You know, I think that Mason Appleton has, you know, if you suggested he'd be a tremendous fourth line player. If he's your fourth line player, wow, you got a heck of a hockey team. Jansen Harkins, I'm still on the fence with. Jansen's got great hustle. He's got great, the work ethic is there. But I mean, again, it doesn't translate to any offense. And at some point, a guy who scores that many goals at every level has got to show something. And of course, we say that about Christian Vesalainen all the time. I mean, I don't know if we've maybe seen the last of Christian Vesalainen. I don't think he's too motivated to be playing for Mark down in the farm. So
certainly hasn't gone down there and torn it up or anything.
No, I mean, you know, obviously there's great hope for Chaz Lucius. There's great hope for Cole Perfetti. You know, we've forgotten Cole Perfetti. Probably the injury did not help this hockey team because he was starting to settle in and he was starting to gain a little bit of confidence, and then the mystery injury that I don't know if anybody ever even saw. So, I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously, Sandberg, again, the same draft. Kovacevic, same draft. These are guys that could still break. I think Dylan Sandberg is going to be on this team next year. I mean, I think he is.
I agree. You've just got a logjam there on the left side, right, Jay? Like,
you do.
You don't have – it's like you have all of these prospects that are NHL ready at this point, and there's just not enough room. Like, you can't come back with the exact same – left side, because what's going to happen is you're going to have, you know, one of your prospect defensemen, you know, sitting in the press box.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, that comes down to what they do this summer. I mean, that may be part of a bigger package that one of the left side guys has to go to get a stud right side defenseman, or to help shore up that middle part of your bottom six forward unit. Because right now, if you're going the Adam Lowry route, then how have you improved your hockey club?
And therein lies the rub, as the old expression goes. This Winnipeg Jets team with many more questions than answers. They're in action later tonight against the Los Angeles Kings. Coverage, of course, in the Winnipeg Free Press. Coverage, post-game coverage, back here on our YouTube channel.
Jay, what did Marty tonight think of the first half of the last season of Ozark? Was he a fan? Like, was he disappointed? Can we get a bit of a review here?
When's that happening? I mean, when's that second half starting? It's time already. And I know that the last season of Better Call Saul is happening, and I'll take 2 seconds to tell you. I'm embarrassed to say that I was never a 30 Rock guy. I've watched.
I wasn't either, but apparently a lot of people liked it.
I'm starting it from. It's absolutely very brilliant. Funny. It's so freaking funny. Golden age of television, guys. Why are we watching hockey?
Well, the truth is, we won't have to. We got another month where you got to keep a close eye on the Jets, and then you'll have some TV quality time.
Jay, keep Drew's name out your freaking mouth.
You can swear on this show.
Slap, 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 slap.
That's right. Yeah. Jay, thank you, buddy.
Always fun, guys. We'll see you at the rink. Not tonight, but soon.
Yes, we'll see you. Cheers, again Jay. Soon. Take care. Okay. There he goes. Jason Bell, his bird, Marty, joining us here on the program as well. Let's take our second commercial break. When we come back, hour number two, give an update on what's going on at Morning Skate, talk more about the Jets, Michael Trakos at the bottom of the hour to look around the NHL. Don't go anywhere. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you. It's a Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you, but why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. Yeah. Sorry, that was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit Rolly's.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
"We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?"
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now with Drew Mandel. That's me with Ezra Ginsberg. That's the man on the right of your screen. At least I presume he's on the right of your screen. He's on the right of my screen, so I assume it's the same for you. But in
if you're watching the show in a mirror, we might be on the opposite sides.
Sure, I suppose that's a fair comment. How about I say you're the man wearing the toque? I think that really will clarify things and make it unequivocally as to which one of us is Drew Mandel and which one of us is Ezra Ginsberg.
You know, we have some breaking news here. I know a few people in the chat were wondering that Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press just texted me. Marty Bird did get a treat after his appearance on the Illegal Curve hockey show. So Marty Bird just enjoyed a treat.
That's good. That's good to know. There were some people wondering if Marty ever poops on Jason, and I don't know the answer to that. I mean, that would certainly be, I think, a
Marty Bird is, he's toilet trained. I think he's he goes in his little birdie potty.
Okay, well there you go. He's got a little birdie. Yeah. Does he do a little birdie flush?
He doesn't know. No, he doesn't know how to flush. He's not Jinxie from
it's the,
it's the
opposable thumbs problem. Yeah,
it's those thumbs. Yeah, Marty does not have thumbs.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. Good to know. Always the latest breaking news here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A reminder tonight, later on tonight, the Illegal Curve post-game show, right around 8:45 p.m., maybe a little closer to 8:50. It's one of those Sportsnet games, so it doesn't start precisely at 6. It'll probably start closer to 6:15 or so. It'll be myself. I'll be back here with a special guest, not Mr. Ginsburg, not Mr. Manouk, Joe Piscucci, former Winnipeg sportscaster,
going
to join me on tonight's post-game show. So you should do that as well. Be sure to join us back here later on tonight for the Illegal Curve post-game show. Myself and Joe Piscucci breaking down everything that went on between the Winnipeg Jets and the Los Angeles Kings. While you're at it, you might as well subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already done so. That way you'll get a little, you know, reminder, a little alert that we've gone live. Smash the like button, subscribe to the podcast. Tell your friends, tell your family the best place to be after each and every Winnipeg Jets game. And again, on Saturday mornings is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel.
And also, if you're watching live or you're watching the replay, smash that like button down there.
There you go.
Smash it. Smash or it. Gently touch it or gently caress it. But we prefer the smash option.
Smash, caress, touch, whatever you prefer. We all appreciate
it. I got a little bit creeped out when you said caress there, Drew. I'll be honest.
Thank you. Admittedly, I creeped myself out when I said it as well. Here's the line rushes from morning skate today for the Winnipeg Jets. Paul Stastny up with Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers. Zach Sanford up with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Blake Wheeler. Evgeny Svechnikov with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. Barron with Dominic Toninato and Jansen Harkins, and then the blue line, Josh Morrissey and Dylan DeMello, Logan Stanley and Brendan Dillon, Ville Heinola and Neil Pionk. Ezzy, what I don't really understand,
I don't think there's one single change from the last game.
There's no changes there at all. Morgan Barron, I was going to say Murray Barron. I'm like, that's not right. Morgan Barron, I'll be okay.
Former St. Louis Blues defenseman.
There you go. Did he play for the Canucks also at some point in time? Okay, good.
He was a big boy, physical defenseman.
Well, he had a good mustache too, if I recall correctly. But
I don't remember the mustache. I mean, if we're talking mustaches, I mean, obviously Lanny McDonald is up there. And you know my favorite of all time, Harold Schnepitz.
Harold Schnepitz, always a classic brow on his upper lip. I don't quite understand why Svechnikov isn't with Dubois and Wheeler. We've seen Svechnikov have his most success all year long when playing with Pierre-Luc Dubois. They've had chemistry from day one, yet in another example of some sort of befuddling coaching decisions, two guys who have chemistry together aren't playing together. And look, Zach Sanford was playing fourth line minutes for the Ottawa Senators. It says something. And it's not a compliment that all of a sudden he's coming out for the Jets, and I know there's an injury issue or a COVID issue, that he's playing on your top six. I just don't get it why it's not Svechnikov in that role. It seems like it's just a no-brainer that isn't being decided upon.
Well, and I actually really liked how Zach Sanford looked on that third line with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton, right? Like, we talked about that. You know, after the Sabres game and after the Leafs game, but you know, going back to the Sabres game, Zach Sanford started 3-on-3 overtime, right? And again, we're not knocking Zach Sanford because he's a good veteran forward, but you know, when these are must-win games and you're going up against the high-powered Leafs and you're going up against a very good Kings team, even though they have injuries and they don't have as much, you know, superstar talent certainly up front, I mean, you wonder, you know, why you aren't putting a more skilled player like Evgeny Svechnikov. And look, Sanford's a big guy. Mm-hmm. And he's got a scoring touch. What does he have, 7 or 8 goals this year? Like, he's a guy that can put the puck in the net. But yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit puzzled as well. But I'm also, you know, puzzled considering the result from last game, right? Sure. And it's more so on the defense. Like, I think we need to talk about that a little bit more, Drew, Ville Heinola's play. Like, you know, say whatever you want about Neil Pionk, and I think, you know, he has struggled at times this year. He's definitely not having as good of a year, you know, as he did last year. I'm not saying that he isn't a top four defenseman or anything like that, but you know, and Pionk, you know, in my opinion, and the numbers bear it out, like expected goals, like it that pairing did not work. And you could say that, okay, well, you know, the Kings aren't going to present the same type of, you know, offensive threat as the Leafs, but you know, they've still got a lot of good players. So, you know, regardless if, you know, that pair is out there against the Kings' second line, which we talked about, like you've got Victor Arvidsson, and you, who else am I missing here? You've got Victor Arvidsson and, refresh my memory, Philip Deneau, of course. Sorry. Yeah, you know, a lot of players going through my mind there. You got Deneau and
Trevor Arvidsson. Moore is the other
Trevor forward. Moore, yeah, is the line. Third guy on that line. And then Iafallo, Kopitar, Adrian Kempe, that's your top line. So most likely you're going to see Josh Morrissey and DeMelo, I would imagine, against the Kopitar line. But I don't know. I don't know what you do in that particular case, but I really didn't like how the way Heinola and Pionk played last game.
Yeah. I mean, with this circumstance, Schmidt out of the lap, you know, for a night at the very least, I'm not sure that the Jets have many other options, but it is just remarkable. How poor this team is defensively. And that's been the story of the entire season. And it hasn't improved and it hasn't changed. And it's just game in and game out. You have to know that privately, every team that plays against the Winnipeg Jets licks their chops because they know how loose the Jets are defensively. They know how easy it is to play against the Jets. They look at it as an opportunity for pad the stats when you face the Jets and the struggles that they've had all season long. You know, and even against a team like Los Angeles, not a high scoring team, middle of the pack in terms of the goals against, but they're very good at shot suppression and they're very good at getting shots on net. I think they're, you know, top 10 in terms of getting shots on that. And they're one of the better possession teams in the entire league. I looked it up before the show started. I think the Kings are, where are they? I had it here before. The LA Kings are.
I know they're top
fourth.
Five.
They're fourth in the league in terms of possession.
Yeah, I was going to say fourth or fifth. Yeah.
Yeah. So, the Kings are going to say to themselves, look, we're going to have the puck on our stick. And the Jets have shown no ability to prevent us from getting to where we want to get the puck. And so even though we don't have the most dangerous scorers in the entire league, they still got a lot of talent. They still got enough good players who can put the puck in the net that, look, the Jets, it's so difficult for the Jets to win a game. That's what you've seen. When was the last time, maybe that game against Vegas, a couple weeks ago, where the Jets really were, I think it was the 4-0 win, where the Jets really sort of had an easy time of it in getting a victory.
That 4-0 game, though, I mean, we know that score flattered the Jets. You know, Vegas was, they were goalied. Okay there, Drew?
Sorry, I just had to blow my nose for a second. Okay. They were goalied by Connor Hellebuyck to start that game. And then after that, it was the Jets, you know, were in control of that game. Look, this is the story of the season. I mean, anybody who tries to, you know, blow smoke up your rear end when this season comes to end at the end of the month, you know, is doing a disservice. I mean, this hasn't been adversity. There hasn't been an overwhelming amount of injuries. It hasn't been an unusual amount of injuries. It hasn't been, you know, like, oh, woe is us. We've lost everybody and we're playing our AHL roster.
Well, look at the Kings. The Kings don't have Drew Doughty. They don't have Dustin Brown. They don't have Andreas Athanasiou.
Yeah.
They're missing a defenseman. I forget who it is. Matt Walker, maybe. They have a defenseman that's out right now.
Yeah, Matt Walker's been out since the beginning of the season, basically.
Right. So, I mean, there's four players. There's four regulars right there.
Sean Walker.
So, you know, obviously Drew Doughty's the big one there. But when you're talking about Drew Doughty and Andreas Athanasiou, I mentioned Brown. Brown. So, I mean, Brown and Athanasiou, like, those are second and third line forwards, right? So, Doughty is your number one defenseman, obviously. So that's the bigger one. But, I mean, look at the Kings. The Kings are still second in the Pacific Division. Yeah. Right. So like every team is dealing with, you know, adversity right now. Have the Jets gone through more adversity than other teams? I mean, that's a debate. I mean, we could get into it with, you know, COVID and coaching and everything like that. I mean, all teams, though, all good teams find ways to overcome that. That's the point we're trying to make.
Well, you know, that's sort of, you know, I've heard that narrative that, you know, the season went off the rails, or the season became a disaster. The season was an impossible uphill climb when Paul Maurice, you know, quit, when he resigned. And there's certainly, it certainly, I think, probably had an impact. But don't kid yourself that this Winnipeg Jets team wasn't disappointing when Paul Maurice left. You know, and you know, I was of the opinion that had Maurice not resigned, he was going to be dismissed. Now, you know, I've heard people pour cold water on that, but I still believe that to have been the case, because you saw how the Jets had been playing when Maurice resigned. You saw the game before, and our buddy Scott Billick wrote about it in the Winnipeg Sun today. He went through a number of games where the Jets should have had better results, or on paper should have had better results, and then they didn't. And that last game before Maurice left was the loss to Buffalo, where the Jets just really didn't show up. So I don't buy that Maurice leaving sent the season into a tailspin. The season was already in a tailspin when he left. Maybe it went into a bit of a further tailspin, but it's basically been the same team with the same problems, with the same flaws, with the same issues, whether it was Paul Maurice as head coach or if it's been Dave Lowry as head coach. Since that 9-3-3 stretch to start the year, they've just been consistently bad. That's the reality of the situation, I would say, is they've been consistent with their issues. They haven't changed from game to game or coach to coach. It's just been consistently disappointing performances by the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get into excuses, I mean, you could come up with multiple excuses for every single team for why they're not doing well. But it's the reasons why a team overcomes that adversity. That's what's important here, and how you get through that. So, yeah, I agree with you, Drew. And for the most part, they're healthy right now, right? If it wasn't for this little kind of COVID-19 patch over the last week with, you know, Kyle Connor and Nate Schmidt again missing tonight's game, hopefully they'll be back for, you know, the next game at home against Detroit, which luckily isn't until Wednesday, I believe, of next week. So they're going to have some time to recover. So I think there's a good chance that at the very least one of Connor or Schmidt should be available. They could, of course, also both be available. But I think you're right, Drew. I think, you know, when you look back at this season, you're not going to point to the coaching change. You're not going to point to one or two injuries as why the Jets, you know, didn't ultimately make the playoffs, because Nikolaj Ehlers being out 19 games, that hurt them. There's no doubt that hurt them. But I mean, they were healthy towards the end of that stretch, and, you know, they've got him now, and they haven't been getting wins, right? Like, they didn't beat the Leafs with Ehlers. They didn't beat, you know, the Senators with Ehlers in the lineup, right?
And so Connor.
Well, exactly. So, yeah. I mean, able to beat Buffalo without Connor and Schmidt, right? So, this team just hasn't been good enough. That's as simple as it has been. Do they have talent, the talent to be better? I do think that, especially when you look at the overtime record and the shootout record, like earlier in the season, if the Jets are able to get three or four more points,
changes the dynamic.
They're you know, tied with Vegas for a playoff spot right now. So I think, you know, it's been a disappointing season on the ice. There's been a lot going on off the ice, and you know, could you argue, you know, that the Jets defense isn't as good as we thought it was going to be? Yeah, because you've seen, you know, Logan Stanley regress. You've seen, you know, Ville Heinola, you know, kind of in and out of the lineup, you know, back and forth between the AHL and the NHL. So there's been a little bit of instability there.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's been a bright spot with Josh Morrissey. Josh Morrissey is playing at that same high level as he was, you know, back during the 2017, you know, 2018-19 season, right? So
yeah. It
hasn't all been bad. I mean, Pierre-Luc Dubois has had a fantastic season.
Kyle Connor
obviously is having a career year, right? So it's not all bad, but, you know, for the most part, you know, it's been too little too late. You can win, you know, whatever it's been, 9 or 10 games in the month of March, but you're still 4 points out of a playoff spot. So you've had to play, you know, 650 hockey or 700 hockey just to remain in the playoff race. It shows you, you know, how much they struggled in the months of January and February.
That's exactly it. And, you know, we know about how important this offseason is going to be and the number of questions there are. And you know, you can't help but look at the situation that they've forced themselves into or that they've put themselves into. You know, there has been an element of asset mismanagement by Kevin Cheveldayoff, particularly on the back end, in terms of, A, I guess not knowing when that next wave of players was going to be ready to crack the NHL, the guys who, you know, the Dylan Sandbergs, the Ville Heinolas, you've created a logjam by going out and acquiring Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon. So now you have, and Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon, I would say, have underachieved this year, in my estimation. I think Schmidt has been better than Dillon, but it's not like either of them have been a panacea for the Winnipeg Jets' faults. And now what do you have? You have too many defensemen and not enough spots, particularly for your young guys. So how are you going to alleviate that problem? Are you going to have to sell one of Schmidt or Dillon? Are you going to have to trade them for pennies on a dollar? You're going to have to trade them and maybe, if you're lucky, recoup the same kind of draft picks you gave up for them last offseason in order to make more room for the young players.
Yeah, I don't know if you're getting 2 second rounders.
I don't think you are. I'm not trading that for that based on the performance this year. Anybody who thinks that they are, I mean, these guys are a year older than they were when those trades happened, and their track record is not very appealing and is not very, you know, there's not a lot on the film that you're going to like to, you know, make a team convinced that these guys need to be on their team for a hefty price. So how do the Jets, it's like they've caused more problems in their attempts to fix a problem that didn't end up getting fixed in the first place. Well,
Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg have to play in the NHL full-time next year, in my opinion. Full stop, period. And whether that's with the Jets or another team remains to be seen. But yeah, I mean, these are both, specifically, we've talked about this a lot. On the left side, the Jets are much stronger when it comes to their defensemen.
Yes.
Right? Like, you know, we've talked about Johnny Kovacevic is kind of that player in waiting to crack into the Jets top six. I don't know if he's going to be able to do that next year, but you're right. I mean, we talk about, you know, coaching and whether the Jets go in a different direction in the offseason and, you know, what's the future of some of your core forwards, namely, you know, a guy like Mark Scheifele, even though I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. I think it would have to be a different general manager in charge of the Jets to trade Mark Scheifele. That's just my own opinion.
Let me interrupt you there for a second. I think it would have to be a different owner, not a different general manager, a different owner.
Well, and yeah, I think there's not going to be a different owner unless you're planning on buying the team, Drew. I mean, I know you've been saving up your money, but
yeah, I've been saving up my pennies, but I don't have enough of them. But I do think that and this is, I think, not talked about enough because you never actually hear from him or you can't actually see it. But I think the influence of Mark Chipman in the hockey operations department is much stronger than I think people really acknowledge or people that really know. And that's my personal opinion. I don't know that for fact, but I do think that loyalty factor that the owner has might trickle down into the loyalty factor that the general manager is forced to have and that the head coach is forced to have.
Yeah, fair enough. And I've been on the record as saying that, you know, if the Jets do trade Scheifele before his contract expires, that's a big if. Like, mm-hmm. There's a good chance that doesn't happen, but mm-hmm. I've been on the record as saying that I think if you're going to trade him, it should be for a number one defenseman, right? So whether you want to compare it to, you know, Ryan Johansson, Seth Jones, mm-hmm. or whatever trade you want to compare it to, I mean, that's kind of the one I made because, you know, Ryan Johansson, first line center, or at the very least, second line center, Seth Jones, top pairing defenseman. So, you know, that would be harder, you know, to find a match there, but like, the two defensemen that I've said to you many times before, you know, that I would love to see in a Winnipeg Jets jersey, Brett Pesce or Jacob Slavin. Now, I don't think the Hurricanes are going to trade either one of those guys.
No.
But it's that type of defenseman, a bona fide top pairing defenseman. And again, I'm not saying Josh Morrissey is a top pairing defenseman. That's not what I'm saying here. It's another number one defenseman that's able to crack into the top four. That's what I would like to see. Like,
look at the best teams in the league. Look at the best teams in the league. And what do they all have in common? Look, we know how important having great centermen is and great center depth, but look at them all for their top defensemen. Look at Colorado. I mean, Cale McCarr. Florida.
Yeah, they've got a few good defensemen.
Yeah, of course.
Devon Taves is pretty damn good, too.
Devon Taves, and they stole him from the Islanders. They absolutely stole Devon Taves from the New York Islanders, you know, for, I think, what was it, 2 second-round picks? Basically,
it was the same thing as the Jets got for, or Jets traded for Brendan Dillon.
Right.
And Nate Schmidt. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because Naismith was a second-rounder and a 2 second-rounders, or a second-rounder and a third-rounder, right?
There were seconds and thirds involved. Yeah. I'd have to go back exactly to look at it. But, you know, Devon Taves was a better acquisition than what the Jets got for a very similar price tag. Look at Florida, you know, this year. Aaron Ekblad, he's out of the lineup, but number one defenseman. Carolina, you mentioned Jacob Slavin. Look at the Rangers, Adam Fox. Look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. Well, they got a guy named Victor Hedman back there. The best teams have a bona fide stud number one defenseman, a game changing defenseman.
And I think what the Jets need more, even, you know, taking that further, is a shutdown number one defenseman. That's kind of what I'm going at here. Like, you know, Devon Taves can provide offense, but he's like a physical shutdown defenseman. Jacob Slavin, Brett Pesce, these are guys that can shut down the other team's best players. That's what I think the Jets are sorely lacking. I'm not taking anything away from a guy like Dylan DeMello or, you know, Nate Schmidt, even though, you know, he's out of the lineup right now. Cause I think I've said this before. I think overall you could argue DeMello's been the Jets' most consistent defenseman after Josh Morrissey. Right. Like, yep. He's been that kind of rock. He's solid, fine. Really good in his own end. You know, you're not expecting much out of him offensively, but yeah, I mean, we're going on a bit of a tangent here, Drew, but that's, I think, a big area that I think you have to explore if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, in addition to coaching and what you're doing. Are you going to replace one of your coaches or a couple of your coaches or the whole staff? But you have to be looking at that defense. And to me, it's a good group of defensemen, but it's really a bunch of number three and four defensemen. And there's not, I mean, Josh Morrissey, I would say, is more of a number two, but I think that's what you're missing. You know, Dougie Hamilton is another guy that I just saw in the chat, even though, you know, he didn't propel the Devils into the playoffs. It's that type of defenseman. It's a bona fide kind of top 20 defenseman, if you want to call it that.
And again, that's just, I think, look, I think Josh Morrissey is a very good hockey player. Is Josh Morrissey the number one defenseman on a Stanley Cup contender? He's just not. Is Josh Morrissey a number two defenseman on a Stanley Cup contender? Yeah, maybe. But you look at guys like Schmidt and Dillon and DeMello and down the Jets lineup, those guys are probably fours, fives, and sixes on Stanley Cup contending teams. That's just the reality of the situation. And I know you get, you know, again, oftentimes you're in the market and you can't see the forest through the trees, and there's a human tendency to overrate the players that you watch the most and the guys that are on your team, and you want to like them more than, you know, than taking a real sort of sober second thought at what they are. But it goes to what we were talking about earlier. Adam Lowry on a real championship contender is a fourth line player. Mason Appleton.
And that's not a bad thing.
That's not a bad thing
again,
at all.
Again, we got to, you know, explain that for everybody who's watching live or, you know, listening on the podcast. Like, Adam Lowry has done an excellent job this year, obviously trying to impress his dad right now. I'm just kidding. But I mean, like, he struggled with scoring some goals, but then he went on a heater there. What did he have? 5 goals in a 6-game stretch, something like that. Like, so, I mean, Adam Lowry, if he puts in 10 to 12 goals, that's what you're expecting. He's done everything. He's an excellent penalty killer. What does he have? 2 shorthanded goals. We've seen how many breakaways this year. Like, Adam Lowry is an excellent hockey player. So we're not saying that he's average or anything like that.
No,
he's good. But if you want to be a team that goes all the way and wins it all, like if you're a Tampa Bay or you're a Colorado, he's most likely going to be on that fourth line. And that's not a bad thing. It just means his role is a little bit reduced.
And does True North, and I don't know the answer to this, do they truly acknowledge where their players are at as compared to the best of the league? Now, on this team, Adam Lowry isn't a fourth line center because there's nobody to play above him in that
third line. Tony Gatto is not going to be your third line center.
No, of course not. And so that's why Adam Lowry on this team is a third line center. But when they're, you know, structuring this team, and if the goal is to be a Stanley Cup winner and a Stanley Cup contender, internally, you have to acknowledge that when they're at that point of contention, Lowry is playing that 4C role for you. And Morrissey is playing maybe that left side second pair for you. That's where you have to have that honest reflection of where you're at as compared to the upper echelon teams. So that's why I like to watch the Jets against teams like Colorado, teams like, you know, I'll hold my nose when I say it, the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Florida Panthers, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Because when they play against those teams and when they truly see themselves up against those teams, they should be able to get a better reflection of where they are in terms of competitive nature against the best of the best in the NHL.
I'll throw out another name. You know, I've been talking about this guy for years. Yeah. Like, again, and I don't know if it's, I know we got a Mike Tracos coming up in a few minutes here, Drew, but a guy like Zach Werenski, right? Like, and I don't know if you could, like, Shifley for Werenski, you rarely see those types of, you know, one-for-one deals. We always joke about that, right? Like, you see them, you don't see Weber for Subban happen every year. It's like one of those trades that happens once every 3 or 4 years, right? But like a Zach Werenski, who is a left shot defenseman, you know, he's a guy that, you know, that is a number one defenseman. He's a top 20 defenseman in the NHL, as far as I'm concerned. So whether it's a player like that, or whether it's a, you know, Jacob Slavin, Brett Pesce, again, I'm not saying that these guys are going to be traded to Winnipeg or that Chevy has even inquired about these types of players, but that's the type of defenseman, a defenseman of that ilk. That's what I think could really, you know, transform that Jets defense. The Jets defense was not transformed in the same way that we thought it was going to be when they acquired Nate Schmidt and Brendan Dillon. They've made the defense better, but it, as we know, it's still got a lot of long ways to go
on paper with way more needed, both on the ice and to continue the improvements, because we know what the Jets defense is like and the Jets defensive zone coverage has been like all season long. Let's take our final break. Ezzy, you'll get in touch with Michael Tracos. Make sure he's going to join us. He's from Post Media, the national hockey writer.
He'll be joining us.
I know. Stay with us, everybody.
I don't have to text him. He's got it in his iCal.
Okay. Stay with us, everyone. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms.
Later tonight.
The Jets and the Los Angeles Kings post-game show right around 8:45 p.m. Join us back here for that. Pleased to welcome to the program from Post Media, a good friend of ours, Michael Tracos, joins us on the program. Michael, nice to see you, buddy. How are things been? Long time no see.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Sorry about that. Just having problems with the link this morning, as usual.
That's okay.
Technology. All good, yeah. It's understandable.
We were in commercial, so it all worked out well. Nothing to apologize at all for there, Michael. You know, obviously brought you on to, you know, maybe look, take a gander around the NHL, look at some of the teams with the trade deadline having been in our rearview mirrors now, and all, you know, all eyes focused on the playoff races and the playoffs, which are about a month away from now. But before we do that, I mean, you obviously, presumably watched the Jets and the Leafs on Thursday night, and one-sided contest, undoubtedly, with the Leafs winning 7-3. And you know, we've talked about the Jets, all season long, and you've kept an eye on them, I know, in your course of your being the national hockey writer for Post Media. What were your thoughts on watching the Jets in person? You know, in just sort of taking that early 2-0 lead and then getting pumped. With 5 unanswered goals after the game was tied at 2-2 briefly.
Yeah, man, I feel a lot for Connor Hellebuyck, guys. That guy, if he's not getting steak dinners on a nightly basis from his teammates, then something is wrong, because I think that Jets team, offensively, they're there. Obviously, the goaltending, I would put them up there with any other team in terms of having a quality number one. Where they're missing it is defensively. And I don't know if it's necessarily the 6 guys patrolling the blue line, or if it's a team defense thing, or if this is something that Paul Maurice saw months ago when he decided that he wasn't the right guy for the job. But they should be a playoff team. They should be one of those teams that we're looking at saying, is it going to be Toronto? Is it going to be Calgary? Is it going to be Edmonton? Or is it going to be Winnipeg who ends the drought? And I just think that unless they manage to or find a way to shore up the defense, whether it's in the off season and getting some pieces on the back end, whether you use some of the money that you're saving from Stastny's contract, but or if it's simply a coaching matter and maybe Dave Lowry isn't the guy, just how Paul Maurice didn't think he was the guy to run this team. But something needs to change because you got a goaltender there where it's just grade A chance after grade A chance. And Hellebuck's basically the reason. And I guess you could even throw Connery in there. He's been really good whenever he's had to stand in there in that as well. But to have that kind of goaltending and to kind of have the offensive weapons, obviously Connor O'Connor wasn't in the lineup and they were missing Nate Schmidt. So I'm talking about defense and you're missing one of your top four guys. Obviously that's going to hurt. But I think throughout the season, you look at just the shot totals that Winnipeg is giving up. And it's plain to see from an outsider that that's the Jets' big issue right now is just how to make life easier on their goaltender.
And, you know, Mike, just listening to you talk about, you know, the Jets' defense and goaltending, it leads very nicely into my question. We want to get into to other teams, but just, you know, one for you about the Leafs. I mean, we've seen, you know, the Leafs come up with the big wins against the Bruins and the Jets scoring a combined, you know, 13 goals here. And I really liked your article yesterday for Post Media talking about how much Austin Matthews relies on empty net goals in his 50 goals. Spoiler alert, he doesn't rely a lot on empty net goals. Most of them have come on goalies, and we'll see if he, you know, how close he gets to 60 goals here. I think he's going to make it interesting. We're also, you know, excited to see if Kyle Connor, you know, can get to 50. These last few games out definitely haven't helped, but he's going to have, I guess, 8 or 9 games left to score 50 goals. That is if he comes back next week against Detroit. But when you look at, you know, the Leafs goaltending right now and the defense, and we know that, you know, Jack Campbell's going to get the start today against Philadelphia, but, you know, we know that Jake Muzzin's still out of the lineup. Ilya Labushkin, who they acquired from the Coyotes, he's out of the lineup. Obviously, you know, Mark Giordano's come in, and even though he got undressed by Blake Wheeler, I think you'd agree that, you know, he improves the Leafs on the back end. But I mean, this is I'm getting to a question here, Mike, but you know, how confident are you in the goaltending and the defense for the Leafs? Because I think you'd agree that, you know, there's a bigger question mark in net with, you know, the health of Peter Mrazek. He might not be ready for the first round of the playoffs. So you might have to go with Eric Schalgren as the backup to Jack Campbell. But specifically that defense, like, what are your overall kind of thoughts on this Leafs defense going into the first round of the playoffs when they could end up playing a very skilled team? They might even end up playing Tampa in the first round.
Yeah, and there you said it, Ezra. It's not just that Toronto fans are concerned about the goaltending. It's in relation to who you might be going up against. So if it's Jack Campbell against Andrei Vasilevskiy in Tampa Bay, well, it's not so much a Campbell problem. It's a how do you prevent Tampa Bay from scoring more than two goals? Because if Tampa scores three, then it's a win. And same with Boston. Like, I know Jeremy Swayman didn't play great the last time the Leafs played him, but this is a goalie who's been top three in the league in save percentage of goals against. You go to Florida, and if Bobrovsky's not getting the job done, well, you've got Spencer Knight there. And you look at their defense, and if Aaron Ekblad can get healthy in the playoffs, it just becomes that much better. So Carolina, the same thing. I think they allow the fewest shots against in the league. And aside from that, they've got Freddie Anderson playing as well as he could play. So it's twofold. One, Jack Campbell, when he was healthy, hasn't looked like the guy he did or he was in the first couple months of the season. And if it's not Campbell, then Mrazek's been hurt. When he's been in the net, he's been awful. And then you got another guy in Eric Schalgren who has played just a handful of NHL games at this point. Unless he's the second coming of Carey Price, where you just throw him in there and he's just dynamic in his early 20s, then fine. But really, it's a recipe for disaster. And you know, they mitigated that disaster by getting Mark Giordano, who right now is playing in a bottom pairing role. He solidifies the defense. He's the kind of guy, and you guys probably saw enough of Gio, where he's at his best when you don't notice him, when he's not getting walked around by Blake Wheeler, when he's just making solid outlet passes in the right position and is just kind of that safety valve on the back end. They get back Jake Muzzin, hopefully in the next couple weeks for them. That's going to make their defense a lot better, just from a top six standpoint, but also physically, especially if he can kind of put away the concussions and get back to being that kind of mean and nasty Jake Muzzin that he has been in previous playoffs. But really, I think Toronto, and I don't think they want to play it this way, but they're going to have to score their way out of trouble. They're going to have to win games. by scoring 5 goals, maybe even 6 goals. Maybe you can rely on Jack Campbell to kind of hold the fort one or two games in the playoff series, but to expect them to just kind of stand on his head and for the Leafs to win defensive, you know, stalemates, 1-0, 2-1, I don't think that's their game. I don't think that's the game they really want to play. They feel comfortable playing. I think they love kind of playing, honestly, from behind, where they can rely on that power play or load up their lines with, you know, Meyer, Matthews, and maybe sometimes Tavares and Nylander. And I know that's not a way that you win a Stanley Cup, but you look at the way that the Leafs are built, and it might be the way that they have to play, especially if you don't have that goaltender back there.
Michael Trakos from Post Media is our guest Saturday morning. We're live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms. Michael, we were talking about this earlier on the broadcast. Since Bruce Boudreau was hired in Vancouver, the Canucks are 13th in the NHL, actually tied for 11th with 55 points, 24, 13, and 7. I don't know if you heard 32 Thoughts, the podcast with Merrick and Elliot earlier this week, but it certainly sounded like Bruce Boudreau is no sure thing to continue as head coach in Vancouver for next season. Can you understand what the Canucks' logic behind that would be if a guy who's come in, has righted the ship in Vancouver to the effect that he has, that he wouldn't just be a shoe-in to continue as head coach? Are the Canucks overthinking things if he's not still the head man in Vancouver? And then, as an addendum to that question, how quickly do you think he'll be scooped up by a coach-needy team if he does end up becoming a free agent, for lack of a better word, again?
Yeah, first thing, I think that's really surprising, especially when you look at Boudreau's strengths, which are, you know, getting guys to feel good about their games. And you look at Elias Pettersson and where he was before Boudreau was hired versus where he's been since then, and it's night and day. So just like Marty St. Louis, where you're going, okay, how do you evaluate a coach in a losing situation? Well, I evaluate them on how Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki are playing. And since St. Louis took over the Habs, both guys have been just outstanding. Same thing with Boudreau. I look at how the guys that you're building the team around, the Quinn Hughes, the Elias Petterssons, the maybe even a JT Miller, how are their games transformed since he got there? And like I said, it's been night and day. So I'm shocked that he hasn't already signed his contract extension. Maybe part of it is Bruce not wanting to be in Vancouver. Maybe he just saw this as a stopgap to his next play. Maybe he wants to go back behind the broadcast in the broadcast booth. Who knows? As for would there be options if he decides to, or if he is a free agent, 100%. He's a popular guy. There's some coaches where you look at them like Mike Babcock, John Tortorella, where you're going, okay, these guys are just going to lay down the hammer. And then there's the guys who are going to be patting you on the back and making you feel good. So Bruce is in that latter camp where I think a lot of teams who are really down their luck, not getting the results they want out of their young players, would love to scoop up a Gabby and just go from there. I just don't know if it leads to playoff success, and maybe that's Vancouver's MO in the sense that, you know, this is a guy that individually can get your players to play well as a team. Maybe he's not the guy to take Vancouver to the next step. But, yeah, I'm still in that camp where I'm a real big proponent of this guy. I thought Vancouver has looked a hell of a lot better since he took over. And, you know, going back to Winnipeg, you got to wonder, I got the crap all over Dave Lowry, but I wonder if Winnipeg really goofed on, you know, when Maurice stepped down, why didn't they go out and get someone with a pedigree? I don't know if Mike Babcock would have been the answer, but someone of that ilk. There's so many names available. I'm not going to go through which one I thought would fit, but you look at some of the teams that have really turned their season around with the head coach, and Winnipeg was one of those teams that I thought really could have taken advantage of that. I don't know if they cheaped out. I don't know what the reasoning was. Maybe they think Lowry's long-term solution. I don't see it, and I think in the summer, that's, you know, aside from getting a better defense, I think a new head coach is going to be at the top of their list.
You know, Mike, you mentioned Mike Babcock in an answer there. If he's learned, you know, his lesson, if he's maybe learned how to not treat people as poorly as he did or was accused of doing. And if he's maybe sort of modernized his approach for 2022, could a team be buying low and getting a pretty damn good coach if they're willing to sort of suck it up and take a few of the bullets that'll undoubtedly come their way? And this isn't a cancel culture type of question.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
You know, if he's learned that you can't treat players in 2022 like you used to treat them in 1995, is that maybe a hell of an opportunity for a team to get a still a pretty damn good X's and O's head coach?
Oh, 100%. Like, Drew, people, I don't know what it was about Mike Babcock's tenure in Toronto, but what he's accused of doing and what actually happened, they seem to be in two different worlds. Like, I understand that you talk to guys like Johan Franzen, and you talk to Chris Chelios, you talk to Mike Modano, and talk to them about their times in Detroit. And despite the winning that was going on, Babcock was seen as just a fascist leader in a lot of respect, and a guy that probably did more harm than good. You talk to people in Toronto, and his worst offense was asking Mitch Marner to draw up a list of who the least hardworking guys were on the team and then coming out to the rest of the team with that list. He didn't beat anyone. He didn't say anything that was, you know, politically incorrect. So this knock on Babcock, I think it came at a time when people were at a highly sensitive spot where, you know, the coach in Calgary had just got axed. There was a bunch of other issues going around. It seemed like it was a day of reckoning for the NHL, and Babcock kind of got tied into it without actually...
Wasn't that also around when Grapes was let go by Rogers CBC, right, Mike? I can't remember that was happening around then. 2019,
right? Huge fallout, and this was the time when the NHL hired the diversity specialist. I think it was there were a lot of issues going around. Okay, that being said, okay, so let's just put it out there. Babcock probably has to apologize, probably has to come out and say the same things that Ken Hitchcock said, which was, you know what, I can't coach the same way I coached back in the 90s or early 2000s. Fine. If he gets that out of the way, and I think he stayed away from the game long enough now, I think he's coaching where university in Manitoba. If he gets all that stuff out of the way, you just go strictly X's and O's. Can this guy coach? Yes, he can coach. He can coach any team he wants. If not, Winnipeg, Edmonton would love to have this guy. Vancouver would love to have this guy. You look at Toronto's record when Mike Babcock was there. They missed the first playoffs. First year of the playoffs because they were aiming to get Austin Matthews. Since then, it was like record-breaking season after record-breaking season. Made the playoffs, lose twice in a game seven to Boston, big deal. He set that team up for huge success. And you know, a lot of what Sheldon Keefe is enjoying right now and, you know, Kyle Dubas is enjoying right now came on the heels of or on the backs of Lou Lamoriello and Mike Babcock. So I'm a big believer that any team that gets Mike Babcock is going to have success. So I really think it's just about where he thinks the perfect fit is. And maybe, you know, maybe going to try a Canadian market is not going to be that place because, let's face it, he's going to get a lot more scrutiny than he would if he goes to a place like Anaheim or one of those kind of markets. But, yeah, Mike Babcock, I don't think we've seen the last of him. And I really hope he does get that chance because I think a lot of what – he's been accused of doing. A lot of it is just, like I said, I think he just kind of got, associated with a lot of really bad apples in coaching. And a lot of them were, you know, I guess part of the problem was a lot of them had coached under Mike Babcock. So you're kind of going, okay, well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree in that regard.
But it is worth pointing out, you know, when, you know, Bill Peters, what he was accused of is a lot worse than what, like, Mike Babcock was not accused. He was accused of being an ass, and a lot of people yes. were an ass.
Yeah. And as Mike said, Drew, everybody knew that he's an ass.
Right.
He wasn't being years ago. This isn't a new thing, right?
He wasn't accused of being like, a racist ass.
No, Henrik Zetterberg and Pavel Datsyuk couldn't stand Mike Babcock. Mm-hmm. They also won Stanley Cups and Selke trophies under him and had their best career seasons. Like, would they have done that without Mike Babcock coaching there? Maybe not, but... at the same time, it's like you don't always have to be Mr. Popular to get the job done. Like, and I know that is sort of an outdated, old school method, but I still think there's a place for the John Tortorellos, the Mike Babcocks. Maybe I don't even know if you put a Ken Hitchcock in that category anymore, because he's sort of revamped his style. But I still think there is a place for that kind of guy who just lays down the hammer, especially for a team that you're going, what am I missing here? I got all the pieces. Something's not working. These guys just aren't buying into a system, or they're not buying into the kind of way that they want to play. Well, Mike Babcock would be perfect in that regard, because I think he's nails down his structure, nails down the team culture, and he gets, you know, let's be fair, he gets results.
Absolutely, Mike. I agree with you. Even though Mike Commodore might not like it, I think there is a good chance that we're going to see Mike Babcock again. And I wanted to get your take on something. You know, it involves a non-playoff team, but they happen to be playing the Leafs. We mentioned earlier the Philadelphia Flyers. I'm not sure if you saw earlier.
Yeah, it has been
confirmed that Keith Yandel's Iron Man streak is going to end today. Mike Yeo mentioned that earlier this morning. So it's going to be 989 games, the longest Iron Man streak of all time. So obviously Phil Kessel is going to love to hear that, because he's only 30 games back or 40 games back. But wanted to ask you, you know, what your take is on that, because I don't know if you saw Scott Wheeler about an hour and a half ago was saying that, you know, Keith Yandel is one of the worst defensemen in the NHL, and he should have been scratched a long time ago. So, I mean, does that sit well with you that, you know, Keith Yandel is going to be a healthy scratch, and that's how the Iron Man streak is going to end? We should say, I mean, it's just incredible that he almost reached 1,000 games. But is this time, like, the Flyers aren't making the playoffs, and you're going to get, you know, a rookie defenseman into the lineup? Ronnie Attard, I don't know a lot about him. But he was a draft pick back in 2019 to the Flyers. Like, does that sit well with you that the Iron Man streak is going to end for Keith Yandel as a healthy scratch?
Yeah, it's a tough one, Drew. Or sorry, Ezra. It's Philadelphia is not a playoff team. Keith Yandel doesn't look like he's an NHL defenseman. So, you know, if he gets the streak while playing, you know, like a six-man role on the back end, does it even matter? Like, you're just kind of doing a sort of a charitable thing here. It's like Phil Kessel, you can say whatever you want about Kessel, but he's still producing. He's still scoring goals. He might be top three in scoring on that team, I think, last time I checked. Yandel, however, you talk to people who actually watch the Flyers on a nightly basis, and this guy has no business being on the back end right now, and it probably should have been taken out of the lineup weeks, if not months ago. So it is a tricky one. Like, you know, I have to think that they probably took the pulse of that room and said, if we do sit this guy, how is it going to sit well with the veterans there? How's it going to sit well with the rest of the team? Because what you don't want is, you know, your players to really feel like, you know, this is a really like a meat grinder type of business that you're working for. And it is kind of funny, though, that they pull this after Claude Giroux gets traded. So you lose your number one voice,
your captain,
and your leader. He's out of the room. Would Claude Giroux have said something had this been brought up while he was there? That's the question I have to ask. You take him out of the equation, you don't have a Voracek. You got a lot of guys who are sort of new faces there. Even a James Van Riemsdyk, I know he was drafted by Philly, but you know, spent the bulk of his career, or I guess his prime years in Toronto, then before going back. So I don't know how many guys would have stood up and said, hey, this isn't right. I don't feel good about this, and I'm going to be here for the next couple of years. And if I'm going to be here, well, I don't want to play for an organization that treats their players like that. Maybe that didn't happen, and maybe that's why you're allowed to do this. That being said, you know, he was probably going to get passed by Kessel anyway. I think the big thing is he's just not going to get to 1,000 games. And it's funny, we were talking about Mike Babcock earlier, and, you know, he famously kept Mike Modano away from reaching a milestone. Was it 1,000 games in the NHL?
I believe it was.
99 or something? So there is a precedent for this. And I think it just speaks to the fact that, yeah, this is a business. This isn't playing house league hockey. And you know what? Even for a non-winning team or a team that's not in the playoffs, it's your best six.
It was 15. Drew, get yourself off of mute. It was 1,500 games.
That's right. I just went and checked. Yeah.
But the point is still, you know, it was still a good point that you made.
and winning solves everything. And when you're not winning, all these supplemental stories come to the forefront, because, you know, it's just another sort of shovel on a season of dirt for a lot of these teams. And it's been a bad year in Philly. And truthfully, anyone who's that upset by this is probably miscalculating just what this business is. And that is what it is. It's a business, and it's nothing more than that. And it's, what have you done for me lately? And Mike, Keith Yandle hasn't done enough for anybody lately to deserve.
And Mike, I think that, you know, you made some good points there. The point that resonated the most with me, though, is that Yandle has not been good for the majority of the season. So it's one thing if Yandle was having a pretty good year, like, you know, he was, you know, firmly in the top four, and it would be a little bit controversial. But I don't think, I mean, I haven't checked the, Flyers Twitter or social media today, so I'm not sure. But I don't think there's going to be this crazy outrage about Yandle.
Flyers fans want this guy out of there, okay? Like, and that's the thing. This isn't happening with Yandle in Arizona, where you can sneak by a guy who's not pulling his weight and the fans aren't really going to notice. They're just going to applaud him. The Philly fans are smart. Like, yep. They are diehard hockey fans. And it doesn't matter if they're in first place or they're at the bottom of the standings. They're paying money to see a game. They don't want a guy who they, quote-unquote, maybe think is a bum. They don't want him just padding his stats to get to 1,000, especially Keith Yandle. What history does he have in Philadelphia? It's not like this is one of their favored sons or something.
He's not Claude Giroux, right?
Yeah, this isn't a guy who grew up in Pennsylvania, has spent his whole career in Philadelphia, and now you're just doing him a disservice. For all they know, it's just, like I said, like, the Flyers fan is different than the Coyotes fan, and you can maybe pull it over.
I noticed you said that singular, Mike, Coyotes fan.
Hey, this is broadcast ever.
There's only one of them.
But you know what I'm saying, though, right? Like, it's an educated hockey fan.
That it is. Michael Trakos is the national hockey writer for Post Media. Mike, always good to catch up with you. Hope things are well. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, guys, and great cameo by Ezra's kid there.
Yeah, my son, you couldn't see it. For everybody that's watching live right now or watching the replay, he was in the corner here. This is my basement office, Mike, and he put the plastic garbage can we have. So he was walking around here. I asked him if he wanted to say hi, but he was being a little bit shy. So he was just in the corner with the little plastic garbage can on his head, just, you know, causing a ruckus like usual.
Well, that's because of my take on Mike Babcock. He said, you know what, I got to put the garbage can on my head. I just can't take this anymore.
Yeah, maybe he was trying to be like a Flyers fan or something. I don't know, with that garbage, trying to cover up his identity. I don't know what was going on there, but
he's got a Ginsburg last name. I'm sure he's covering up his identity in more than one way in any event. Michael, thank you, buddy. Good seeing
you. Thanks, Mike.
There he goes. Michael Trakos of Post Media joining us here on the program. That does it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be back later tonight with the Illegal Curve post-game show. Myself and Joe Piscucci right around.
The newest member of Illegal Curve.
Yeah, the newest member of Illegal Curve, at least for one night only. But Joe is always a great guy and a great guest, so he'll join us tonight right around 8:45, 8:50 p.m. thereabouts. Come back, join us to talk about the Jets and the Kings.
Before we go off air here, sorry, Drew, I just wanted to quickly say it was our really good friend Neil Rockman's 40th birthday yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I would be remiss if I didn't. He's one of my best friends. We've been friends since we were, 13 years old, 14 years old. So happy 40th to the guy that we call Rock. And then we also got to throw out a 40th birthday. The reason why I'm not doing the post-game show tonight is because one of my other best friends, Aaron Bernstein, of Bernstein's Deli, one of our good sponsors here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. His 40th birthday is tonight, even though it was his actual birthday was March 4th.
Yeah. Then he got COVID.
He had COVID. So happy birthday to Rock. Happy birthday to Aaron of Bernstein's Deli. Just wanted to get that in there before we went off air here.
There you go. Well done there, Mr. Ginsburg. A big thank you to all the sponsors of Illegal Curve who make the Saturday show, who make the post-game show, who make the website a possibility, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Bernstein's Deli, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, and Grid Park. Support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. As I mentioned, post-game tonight, 8:45 p.m. thereabouts. Come back, join us for that. If you haven't already done so today, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, leave us some comments, leave us some feedback, tell your friends, tell your family.
Hide your kids, hide your wife.
The best place to be Saturday mornings and the best place to be after each and every Winnipeg Jets game is back here on the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. Big thanks to Jason Bell. Big thanks to Michael Trakos for joining us on the program. Big thanks to Mr. Ginsburg for joining us as well. For Ezzy. By
the
way,
sorry, but I was just going to say, I just got a text. Dave Manuk is now in the British Virgin Islands.
Oh, the British Virgin Islands. Excellent. Yeah. Maybe he'll be back for Wednesday's post-game show. We shall see. If not, Ezzy and I will hold down the fort as we have been doing for the last week and with our pleasure. Want to mention, of course, before we leave, the Moose, they won last night, 5-0. The Ice, they won in Regina last night, 7-0. So two good results for the two Winnipeg.
So you're saying the Jets are going to shut out the Kings tonight?
I'm not saying anything of the sorts at all. I'm just saying that the Moose won 5-0 and the Ice won 7-0. So good for both.
I don't think
of
the
them.
Ice have lost a game in a very long time. The Ice are, they might be the best team in the WHL right now.
Well, you can read all about it on illegalcurve.com. Jake Maurice gives us a weekly ice update that you can check out. It was earlier in the week, and it'll be again either Monday or Tuesday this week. So you can check things out there as well. For Ezra Ginsburg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for joining us this morning. We'll see you later on tonight. You've been watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.